Today's episode, Texas, Oklahoma, officially in the SEC. What's the future for the Longhorns? What's it mean for A&M and the rest of the league? Plus, Utah gets a coach in waiting, and Nebraska, creative fundraising potential.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Josie's on a vacation far away. You know, I like my girls a little bit older.
Russ Dellinger.
All right, all right, all right.
And SI's Pat Forty.
We could bury him under the N.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod and welcome to July. Getting closer now. Getting closer. And July 1 was a big day, officially, history of college football. Texas, Oklahoma has officially joined the SEC. Pat, I think you and I 3 years ago were trying to go to Japan for an Olympics, and did this break when?
We were live podding from basically emergency podding from Japan at like 4 a.m. right before the Olympics started. Yeah. Well, all hell was breaking loose in Birmingham.
Officially, yep. Oregon, Washington, yeah. USC, and UCLA will join, I believe, on August 2nd. They will join the Big Ten. And that was a year ago, including Ross and I trying to write that story, break that one, including Ross one time filing or texting to me some bit of information that allowed us to file. We were working it together. You were on an inner tube going down a river at a bachelor party.
I was in Austin at a bachelor party on the San Marcos River doing tube floating.
Scramble. Yeah, it's Scramble great. City. You want to be a sports reporter.
But you know what? It all happened, or most of it, the bulk of it, happened on the way as we were driving in a car full of six dudes driving to the river. And then as we got to the river is when it all kind of like completed. So I was able to get on the tube, float down the river, and have a beer or nine.
Once I was like, all right, you're done. I'll handle the rest. I remember it was back and forth. We're texting everybody, calling everybody, trying to get any. And then it was like that one. We'll get to the Texas. That one was like a roller coaster because it was like Oregon and Washington. I don't know. Well, maybe it was like total mayhem. And it's funny, though. It was 11th hour because I remember going to, I remember we did not write the story. It was like 1 or 2 in the morning Eastern time. And I was like, we don't know.
I went to bed that night thinking Oregon and Washington were staying.
By 10 the next morning. They were telling people they were staying. Then they weren't. And so it's like, I don't know what to believe. But anyway, it was totally wild. And then the next morning it's like 6 a.m. and someone's like, they're going. I'm like, what? I slept 4 hours. What happened? Here's what's funny about the whole thing. I remember we broke the story last year on Washington and Oregon and possibly Cal and Stanford if they wanted to go to like 20. Like they were like a second tier maybe. Yeah. And the story comes out and it was like, no way. This is bizarre. Like nobody, like initially people are like, that's the crazy. You can't have Washington in the Big Ten. Can't have, or like, it was so foreign. Right. And then by like a year later, you're like, yeah, okay. It kind of makes sense. Right. And it was the same thing with Texas, Texas, Oklahoma, and the SEC. They do their business a lot cleaner. It was just like, this is done. Well, it came out, Houston Chronicle, right? A&M was trying to block it.
A&M reporter.
Yeah.
A&M leaked it.
And they leaked it to try to block it. So there was a little bit, but at the time it's like, no, this wouldn't make, like, it's awkward. It doesn't make, now it's like, yeah, of course, that's going to be good. And in a year you'll be like, oh yeah.
Well, and in between those two, everything else, USC and UCLA, which started.
Yeah, that was the actual. This is the actual anniversary of that, right? It was June like 30th, July 1.
It was June 30th. Yeah. John Wilner broke it. I was eating ramen with my son in Atlanta, and I had to stop with the chopsticks halfway to my mouth when I see this John Wilner tweet. I was like, "No."
Yeah, I was in my Destin condo for family vacation for all of 10 minutes. Went out on the balcony, after the Wilner tweet, because it was an alluded tweet. I don't think it was like a done tweet. And I was able to get confirmation soon after that this was done and happening. And then I didn't see my family for a day and a half.
So it's been some weird summers. Like, we do not, you know, there's no coal mining going on here over at the College Football Inquirer.
No.
But you know, you have a job and you sort of expect like this would be the quiet time. And then every year, it is most certainly not the quiet time.
Every summer, there's been an eruption. I can't believe we can dare to dream. It's July 2nd.
Yeah, knock on, please.
Can we make it to September 2nd?
At least wait till Monday. Can we have the weekend, people? Can we have like a nice.
Well, think about all the things, right? 2020 was obviously COVID. Are we going to play football? Well,
we had nothing to do that year.
2020. Yeah. 2021 was the implementation of NIL, and then 3 weeks later, the Texas and Oklahoma.
UCLA, 22
was what we just talked about, USC and UCLA. 23. Yeah, and 23 was the explosion of the Pac-12, though that came the first week of August, still summertime. And then this year, it's obviously been litigation, you know, in a new college athletic model. But hopefully the realignment doesn't arrive just yet.
Yeah, ACC, keep it together.
Then there was the date this spring when UMass decided to go to the MAC. I mean, that was earth-rattling.
Huge repercussions.
Huge startling presses.
It's, again, I think you should all feel bad for us. We have really hard jobs. But yeah, it's like insane conversations. But anyway, it is here, and we'll talk more about the Big Ten, because this is really the Big Ten to me is really changed. It's there is no more Big Ten. The old Big Ten had a thing, even when they added Penn State and Nebraska. They were maybe Maryland and Rutgers. They were kind of sideline players, backdrop players. But this is I don't know what this thing is now, but the SEC is still trying to keep its thing together. And Texas is the big dog. We talked about Oklahoma recently. So if you want to, you're a Sooner fan, you want to hear, you can go back to the one where we talk a little about what Sooners are expected. But Ross, you were down in Austin for the party to celebrate their SEC membership. What happened? What is the mood in Austin, Texas right now?
Very exciting. You can imagine when, Texas throws a party, what it might be like. It was probably everything you thought in more. There were 18,000-20,000 fans there on a blistering hot Sunday. It was 95 to 100 degrees, but it didn't stop anybody. The autograph line for the Texas coaches was upwards of 150, 200 people. The line to get into the SEC Village, which kind of was like, gave like a history of each SEC school and all that, you could go around and look at stuff, was probably 300, 400 person line there. It was impressive. You had the big SEC Network stage, and then across from it, you had a stage twice as big where Pitbull ended the night on stage. And then high up above in the Texas Clock Tower was another whole party that was taking place in the president's office, which is like a 100-year-old library. They've turned into a president's office. It's incredible. He's got a sun deck that overlooks the campus, and they turned it into a party there, a big party for the Texas head coaches, boosters, trustees. Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, was there. Of course, athletic director Chris Del Conte, other administrators. So it was
Johnny
a who's
Walker
who
Blue?
There.
Johnny Walker Blue, was he there?
I believe Johnny Walker Blue was there, along with many of his friends. In fact, we walked into the when you walk into the main room, right there greeting you was just one of the servers who said, there's a bar to your left and there's a bar to your right. I'm like, that's what I like to hear when I go into a party. And then either way you turn, not only was there a bar, but there was a server with a tray full of drinks right there. So you didn't have to go to the bar to get drinks. So it was a Texas-sized party, Dan. So a lot of There was a lot of, hey, why? I did not partake.
No, I'm kidding.
After I was done with my reporting, I may have gone back to my hotel.
Journalistic ethics.
And partook, whatever.
The best Johnny Walker drink, Blue is one that the Longhorns bought you. That'd be my theory. But I don't know. Anyway, good for you.
A lot of excitement, right? A lot of excitement there. It was, you know, they shot off the end of the night. The culmination was these massive fireworks they shot from the clock tower that were pretty incredible, followed by Pitbull. And right before the fireworks, you had everybody kind of spoke, right? The university president spoke, Chris Del Conte, SEC commissioner. Greg Sankey spoke. He got up there and his first line to the Texas crowd was, "All right, all right, all right."
Sankey said that?
Harkening to, he did, harkening to the Matthew McConaughey. So, yeah, it was quite a day, in 8 hours spent kind of following around some folks there on campus. And they're ready for the SEC, Dan, and they are confident in their abilities.
Yeah, it was a great story. Really good. Some great details in there and insight into, I think, the Texas mindset. Talked Jay Hartzell, the president there, who's a fantastically like personable guy for a university president. You know, he's really good conversationalist. He likes sports. His dad was a sports editor in Oklahoma when he was growing up. And then Del Conte is Texas. I mean, if ever a guy was like born for that job, whether he knew it or not, it's probably Chris Del Conte to be the AD at Texas. And because he's just this big presence, swaggering, cocky, charming. You alluded to his kind of loud wardrobe. I mean, like you see CDC coming and then you hear him and he's a lot, but they bring a lot to the SEC table immediately. They're the best all-around athletic department in the country these days. They've won 3 of the last 4 all-sports directors' cups. They're going to come in and win SEC championships right away in multiple sports. The biggest question is whether they're going to do that in football. And I think they're pretty well situated to at least make a run at it. I don't know whether they're as good as Georgia this year, and there's plenty of other company that's really good in the league. But this is like, Texas has hit this just about exactly right, I think, in terms of being up and running full strength when they're coming in here. You know, there's kind of a bit of a gamble when they hired Sarkisian, right? He had been a head coach before, but hadn't really won at a high level. He had done great work with Saban, but it was kind of wait and see. And then all of a sudden last year, boom, they make the playoff and they have conquered NIL, as one would expect, and they're gonna come in with a bang and with a swagger for sure. I have to say that I'm a little underwhelmed by Pitbull as your big crowning act there. It's a little musty, man. He's like 43 years old. I was looking up, his first big hit was 2011. You're Texas. You need to pull somebody that's red hot right now. Texas. Come on,
they Beyonce. Tried to Where's get, Beyonce? They tried to get an even. No, well. Yeah. They tried to get an even older band, actually. Journey was lined up to come.
Oh, no.
And I would have stayed for Journey.
Don't stop believing with the underdog Longhorns.
I would have certainly stayed for
come on now.
For Journey. But something happened with Journey.
I remember dancing to Journey at my senior high school prom.
We can do
that is musty.
I'm glad there's not video of that.
Well, the Spasmatics were the intro. They are a cover Austin, I think an Austin-based cover band that dresses fairly wildly. They were really good, though. They did play "Don't Stop Believin'."
Texas has credit to Sarkisian and that staff. Thing about Texas that undermines Texas, it's so big. There's so much power, and the problem is it's big and there's a ton of power, and if you can't corral it and organize it, then it almost gets destroyed from within. But it's the most powerful horse, right? It's the bull. You got to ride the bull and control the bull. And Mac Brown was able to do that. And when it's going, it looks easy, right? Because you're like, how the hell can you screw this up? Produce as much talent as any state in the country, if not more, but enough that if we just get the guys that are already predisposed to come here He used to have the, you know, junior day. You got 18 guys ready to come, and then you just kind of pick your other guys. You have enough to win a national championship. The problem is, clearly, that isn't that easy to do, or all these coaches would have done it. Other schools consistently win. It's like set up better. Even LSU. But like, you look at like an Ohio State, they just basically just keep winning. They just consistently are like really good. And Texas is either, if you can get a hold of it, Del Conte. I would also say DeLoss Dodd was a classic Texan, by the way, his predecessor.
Oh, yeah.
He was like the old oil money guy. Yeah. Like, right. But Del Conte has got this thing organized. He's the perfect AD at this time for this school, all of that. And Sarkisian, he did come in with a lot of questions. I remember being like, why Sarkisian? What is it about this guy that makes people think he can get it done? And the problem with Texas is everyone wants the job, sort of, or the boosters think everybody wants the job. Remember, they were like going to get Saban. You know, I think Miss Terry was hunting for houses, I'm sure, was one of those stories.
2013. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it was I think that was realer than most people thought.
You think he could have, you think he really was looking at it?
I think Kirk Bowles wrote a story last year going into the Alabama Texas game, basically confirming that it was a real thing. But I had heard from a couple of people fairly close to Nick Saban that Saban in 2013 called them and asked them what they thought of the job. So I think there was some serious stuff there. That's one of the rare times that Texas didn't get its man. There's many times that Texas, you know, lands the fish it's trying to catch. But that was one of the rare times it did not. In fact, speaking of that, one of the big topics in Austin was the new baseball hire that Chris Del Conte poached from Texas A&M, Jim Schlossnagel. And he was there. He was around. I talked to him a little bit. He spoke to SEC Network, and that's been a hire that has riled up Aggie land enough to where some Texas officials had to contact authorities about threats made on Schlossnagel. So there's some serious hate there. Not like that rivalry needed some more juice, Dan, but
threats on a baseball coach. Good Lord.
Well,
welcome to Texas, Dan.
Can we talk about how the baseball coach handled that? Can we?
Yeah. Seventh inning stretch. Yeah. He was taking an interview, wasn't he? Or something like that. Take me out to the ball game. Hey, is this Del Conte on the phone? What's going on? Call the bullpen. That's not the bullpen phone, coach.
He blistered the reporter. Yeah.
Schlossnagel out Petrino'd Petrino with that one. I mean, that was such a weasel move. I could not believe it. You want to lie brazenly, openly to everybody's face within 24 hours of taking a job? Fine. Okay. But to like berate the guy that is asking you the legitimate question and make it seem like this is just some terrible, you know, miscarriage of personal injustice. That was, wow, dude, that's a true weasel.
The reporter from Texas, at least Texas is like,
yeah.
I mean, this is not, you know, Mike Wallace of 60 Minutes showing up.
at least he apologized. A couple times he did it. Yeah,
I didn't see the apologies.
He did. He apologized toward the end, I think, of his introductory press conference, and then again on Sunday he was on with SEC Network, and I think unprompted he said
what a hero. What a hero.
He said he was at the time, not thinking straight immediately after the loss, and he apologized to the reporter. I don't know that he contacted the reporter. I'm not sure.
Well, that would have been a real apology.
They don't normally do that, but I found.
I tell you what,
one
of the most interesting things that he said was, again, and he said this in his introductory press conference about why he really left. He mentioned the hiring of Trev Alberts and some of the things that Trev Alberts, I guess, had said to him. And he said it again on Sunday. He pointed to the hiring of Trev, Trev Alberts in the change in athletic director there, really? Which is quite interesting. You don't see you know, coaches say those things, but that, so that rivalry is, oh boy,
baseball, it's hot. It's a beanball.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you go out and pluck somebody right after a career highlight, and it's your arch rival. Ooh, that, and you're going to play them all the time now. That's a pretty hot one.
Will Texas be everyone's most hated team immediately in the SEC? Like, I know there's a long, long, long tradition of hate in the SEC, right? Oldest rivalries, hundreds of years, Iron Bowl. I mean, I get it. I get how much Mississippi, the Egg Bowl, but I feel like the rest of the league, as much as they hate each other, is going to learn to hate Texas immediately. I'm wondering how much.
Well, sure. I don't think they need a lot of runway for it. Certainly, Texas A&M is going to tell everybody how much they hate them and how. but no, look, Texas carries itself in a grandiose manner, hence the whole celebration that Ross just went and attended. But there's enough pride, and I think really to a degree enough almost, what's the word, like not really honor among thieves, but camaraderie amongst combatants in the SEC too, that like, you're not just going to walk in here and tell us what to do. You know, Alabama wants to beat Georgia badly, and LSU wants to beat Alabama badly, and Florida wants to beat Georgia, and so on and so forth. But there's also a lot of pride in how the league has been run, and it, generally speaking, despite going to war with each other, when it's time to lock arms, they do. And I don't think they're going to say, oh, Texas, come on in and take over.
Yeah, that was one of the – I talked to Paul Feinbaum, who was there, and you know, he's always up for a good chat in a great quote, including the description of A&M or Texas kind of stealing Jim Schlossnagel from the Aggies. It screams SEC. He said, "We're going to body bag our biggest rival immediately after their glory moment by hiring their baseball coach." It's so SEC. So they that's the first Texas's first act, and I would guess that we're going to see many more of those acts. Already, Chris Del Conte took Mississippi State's head women's basketball coach, took Kentucky's track and field coach just over the last few years. Of course, Steve Sarkisian was an assistant at Alabama. And Pat knows well, Bob Bowman, legendary Arizona State swim coach.
That was similar to the Schlossnagel thing. We're like, you've just taken your program to its highest point. Guess what? You're gone. 24 hours later, I'm taking you.
So within the league, they're already doing that outside the league, right? Within the league, it's going to be interesting when they are a conference member. How many coaches will they take from other SEC schools? And that's obviously going to create some bad blood. But we've seen that before, right? Florida, Georgia, Alabama, you know, LSU, they've taken coaches from other schools, and it just, it intensifies everything.
Horns down, will it be allowed?
I think
apparently Sankey was asked about that at the OU party, which was the next day, and he said he's not going to get into that. It's July 1st. Plenty of time for his head officials to handle that.
Yeah, I would hope Greg Sankey is smart enough to not even try to get in the way of that one.
Yeah. I think horns down.
Yeah. No, Sankey was there at the party, spent a couple days there in Austin, and I had a conversation with him about Austin. I have something to admit. I love Austin.
This is like,
that's not a controversial take.
This is like when Nick Saban went on vacation last year to Italy and came back and told everyone, "You guys hear about this Italy place? It's a great summer vacation. There's like architecture and the food's good. And there's wine." Like, thanks, Nick. Really, Austin's a good place to live. Thanks, Ross.
I've been, that was my third time, I think, there. But I mean, every time I go there, I find something new and incredible. I found a bar in a parking garage called The Garage. And it's a speakeasy cocktail bar underneath a parking garage in downtown Austin. Also found Lady Bird Lake and paddleboarded on that. Just so much to do. It got me thinking of SEC towns and where Austin kind of fits in and how it fits into the SEC.
Best one.
And, you know, I don't think it's that difficult of a competition. The only comparison, because it's so big, right? I mean, it's going to be the biggest, I believe it's bigger than Nashville. So it's going to be the biggest SEC town. And so there's probably no comparison there. But the most comparable is Nashville. But even that doesn't quite do it.
Yeah,
justice.
No offense, Vandy.
It just, there's not much SEC. I mean, there's a lot of SEC fans in Nashville. There's not a lot of Vanderbilt fans. I mean, they're there,
right.
But you know,
right. You don't have a power.
It's hard to get fired up as like
a
weekend with your friends to be like, let's go to the Vandy game. Right.
Yeah. No, the fun thing in Nashville is to go to a big sports bar and watch the fans from the 19 schools that all live there.
Dodge the bachelorette parties. Yeah.
I tell you what, we all got to get down there and do an Austin live pod before they play Georgia third weekend in October. And then the next day on Sunday, F1 race.
Well, I'm sure the hotels are very cheap.
My gosh. Yeah.
I would say Austin is. Go ahead, Pat.
Now, there's only two problems with Austin. It's an excellent place, but the traffic is now outrageous. 35 north and south is impossible, and it's 1,000 degrees every day. But otherwise, it is.
You got to get a good spot downtown, and like a little like Nashville too. But Austin, it's now a major city or on its way to being a major city, but it doesn't have the infrastructure to handle a major city. So traffic is incredible, and the footprint of downtown is like. It struggles to, it's like just bursting, right? But
yes,
pretty incredible place. I mean, Nashville, Columbia is underrated. Athens is obviously your quintessential college town.
Yeah. Small college towns like quintessential Athens is my favorite. I wouldn't even put places like Austin and Nashville into the college town type of list. I guess you'd have to have a college town and a city town or a city college town and a college city. So,
two different lists.
Somebody asked us when we did I got some feedback. Well, we got a lot of feedback on our toughest places to play. And I'll take this moment to offer my apologies to West Virginia. I don't know how.
That was an oversight.
I don't know how we didn't mention West Virginia.
Yeah.
That's our true. Bad. Yeah. Our bad. I will personally, as penance, I will ride the train back and forth like five times.
Oh, shoot. I forgot.
I'll ride the train.
I'll have to wear it next week, Mike. I got a train shirt.
Yeah.
Sent to me. Wow.
Let Renmaker, load the train up. No, they try to stuff people. I'm not getting in the stuff. How many people can we stuff in there? I'll ride the train as penance when I return. But anyway, our bad. But someone said, what's the easiest to get to? Because I always think this is a big thing. And like people say, where should we go for a game? And sometimes I'll be like, you know, like I think Neyland Stadium in Tennessee is unbelievable. And there are like an airport and hotel rooms right there. Right. So it like adds to the not only are you going to get an incredible game environment, you don't really even have to rent a car. You can just fly in and you can get a hotel and there's a lot to do. I think Auburn's incredible, but it's harder to get to and how do you stay there and all that. So there's some things. Austin would obviously, I think, fit into that because it's much easier to get to and there's a ton to do. Golf, it's just a great, I don't want to say, although I think only guys listen. That one time we did the survey, there were like eight women. But great guy weekend or friend weekend.
Maybe 12. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Bachelor party. No. I'm going for a second bachelor party in August in Austin. Because the groom this coming year was on the bachelor party last year. And he had so much fun. He wants to do his bachelor party back in Austin. So we're back in Austin mid-August for another bachelor party that I'm planning. God forbid a power conference does not dissolve in mid-August while I'm on a tube floating down the San Marcos Road.
I don't know. It worked last time. We did get the scoop.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right, we have more Texas talk in a second. Let me give this to a break. We'll be right back. All right, so it was 10 years ago Texas A&M joined the SEC, and it was a very high hopes. Now, Texas A&M has not historically hit the highs, or occasionally it has, but we're talking, you know, Bear Bryant Day, Junction Boys and stuff. But there was this belief that Texas A&M, and certainly once they got it rolling with Johnny Manziel, like, here comes this power. If you can harness all these players in Texas and all the money and everything that A&M has, they could really be a player in the SEC. That did not pan out. Obviously, the potential is there, but they haven't been able to make it happen. And they have thrown money beyond money. The stadium is ridiculous. The facilities are ridiculous there. College, like, you walk around College Station, like, it's just modern and clean. They go and hire a national championship coach and Jimbo Fisher. That doesn't pan out. They buy them out. Like, they don't care about money, but it hasn't worked. And it has not changed the competitive balance of the SEC at all. They're just another team that's sort of been in that mix. They've not made Atlanta, right? They've not played in the SEC. They've never won a West.
No.
So Texas is going in much hotter, obviously. Pat said, coming off of a national semifinal, they've got Quinn Ewers. They've got Arch Manning, you know, as the backup. They've got talent all over the place. So they're coming in hot. But what does Texas joining mean for Texas A&M? Does it help? Does it hurt? Obviously, you're no longer the only Texas school. And you also have Oklahoma, who's recruiting the hell out of the state of Texas, as they always do. Or does it help that it's like the SEC is more ingrained in the minds of recruits and players and all that as the preeminent league in the state of Texas? Sorry, Big 12. I hate to do that to you. But the big dogs are in the SEC. What does it mean for Texas A&M? And what does it mean for everyone else if Texas gets good?
I don't think it's good for A&M. And I think that's one of the reasons they were against it in the beginning and were behind actually leaking the news that they were coming in, perhaps in hopes that they could be blocked at the 11th hour. I don't know. But A&M was not happy they were coming in. One of the placating moves was that the A&M will host Texas this year in the first football game of the renewal of that rivalry. But this is massive competition within your own state, a place that you hated, still hate. And I mean, I was there. You referenced it, Dan, when they, you know, when they welcomed A&M in, and I went on a trip with Sly before A&M's first game in the SEC, and they gave Sly a pair of boots, apparently like Texas gave Sankey a pair of boots. So everybody, the SEC commissioners get their boots in Texas. But there was an A&M trustee who said, you know, for the next 50 years, we will be the dominant brand in the state of Texas. And that hasn't fully planned out, and it's not going to pan out now, I don't think. It's not to say A&M can't win and succeed. We've been waiting for it forever. They, as you mentioned, they have all the facilities and financial backing and player access that you can imagine. They just haven't put it together in terms of football. They have in some other sports, I do have to say. I did pretty well savage Ross Bjork on his way out of A&M, but I give him credit. They won a national championship this year in women's tennis. They came close in baseball, so their all-around sports program is good. But the football has never gotten over the hump, and adding Texas, I don't think, helps them get over the hump.
Yeah, so back to the story you led off with, Dan, about how we were all at you guys were overseas at the Olympics when everything broke about Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC. I was at SEC Media Days, standing at the top of the escalator with none other than Ross Bjork, who was, I believe, the only athletic director that appeared at SEC Media Days that year. And he had to step away to take a call. And when he returned, Texas was in the SEC. And then Jimbo Fisher, 5 minutes later, took the stage at SEC Media Days. And I remember Ross Bjork looking at me as the news came out, and I was standing right there, and I immediately did the reporter instinct of, we got to get a quote from you on this. And he said, I believe it was something like, we want to be the only school in the SEC from the state of Texas, and that won't change. So it was pretty clear how they felt. And I think they feel that way, like Pat said, for a reason. I don't necessarily think it would be good for the Aggies if Texas going into the league. Not only that, but Texas getting good.
I think I can see this two ways. I actually think, at first, if it's happening, so Texas A&M can do it. You know, there's not anything going to happen here. I kind of get the idea of, it's almost like Michigan State. Like, Michigan State is a terrific athletic department, and they at times are really good at football, but they're just like, they're boxed in by Michigan and Ohio State and then Notre Dame, which sits right on the border of Michigan and Indiana. And it's hard, right? You've just got these three historic programs like trying to win recruits when all three of those are really local options. Particularly when Urban was there, he recruited the state of Michigan a little bit more, but it's hard. But the state of Texas has so many good players. And I feel like A&M, it's like at some point they're going to get this right. And the idea that like there's going to be so much focus now in the state of Texas on the SEC, and so much focus on, I want to play in that Texas A&M game. And I want to play, you can come to Texas A&M now, you're going to play Texas and you'll play Oklahoma. And we're going to be more, it's more, just the excitement of the SEC, I think, will be higher now because everybody in the region is there. And I know that's not how they build conferences generally anymore. Like, it's kind of like basketball in North Carolina. Like, you wouldn't set it up with Tobacco Road, but if you're like a kid growing up in North Carolina, like, I want to play for one of these schools because this is what everybody's talking about. Everyone's excited about ACC basketball and Tobacco Road basketball. And there's a little bit of a bump you get, even though it's hard when you're right next to each other. But there's just so many players. I think Texas A&M, it's just a mat. They have everything in place there. It's just a matter of, we can get really good. And maybe it's not, we can beat Texas this way. Like Mark D'Antonio, he said it at Michigan State, like, it's hard to beat Michigan on signing day. And then he just sort of leave it at that. See what happens in October, right? They're going to get enough guys. I think that this, in a way, can be a real benefit for A&M, because it just sort of been out there. Yeah, they're the only SEC team, but it didn't feel like the SEC was Texas, and people in Texas love Texas. They love the state at their state. And I just feel like, man, that A&M UT game is going to be so big that over the next 10 years, so many kids are going to grow up saying, I want to play in that. The way kids grew up saying, I want to play in the Florida State game. I want to play in the Ohio State Michigan game. Like, that's what I want to do. And if you don't have that game and you're trying to create rivalry. So I think there's a real opportunity for A&M, because it's not like you sit there and go, well, they can't have a big stadium, or they don't have enough money, or they don't have location. Like, yeah, they're not Austin, but they're the way Houston keeps growing, like, practically going to be a suburb in a couple of years. But, you know, they're 40 minutes from like Katy, like west suburbs of Houston. Like, it's a different environment than Austin, but it's a great place to go to school. So I think A&M can do something here. Am I crazy?
No, I mean, I get what you're saying. I mean, there's opportunity, as there always is there. That's the thing. You know, there's always a chance for Texas A&M to be good. It's just them getting around to doing it. But, you know, I think you'll see. I mean, there's going to be competition for red hot competition between multiple schools for every good kid in the state of Texas from a lot of schools in the SEC. It is fascinating. You know, I mean, the SEC is having its media day for the first time ever in the Dallas Metroplex area. That's on purpose. That's saying we're taking this state. look out, Big 12, here we are. So it's another dynamic
or
of that.
Or even national sure. pro. Like, it's look out, Ohio. Like, Ohio State's feasted on Texas players yeah. for a long time. Maybe now sure. it's harder for Ohio State sure. to get in there. Poor Buckeyes. I'm sure they'll be okay. But I don't know. I just...
Well, I do. I mean, the A&M Texas game will be massive. The first one, but then going forward from there. And you know how these things work. I think a big reason Mike Elko is the coach at A&M now, and they swallowed $76 million on Jimbo Fisher, was, well, Texas is getting really good. We can't keep going on this trajectory. They're coming into our league, and they're playing better than we are. We need to do something. And they did, and we'll see. A lot of people think A&M is going to be a lot better this year. They're going to be more physical. They're ranked in the, going to be ranked in the top 25. It's always wait and see with A&M, though.
Yeah, the so at the party, there was obviously much A&M talk. And one during the introductions, I can't remember if it was Del Conte or maybe the president or someone with Texas was going through the list of, you know, teams that they would play in the SEC. And the last name, of course, he said was the Aggies. We're gonna play the Aggies, and the crowd just like roared, not like booed, roared with approval. And I think there's been a lot missing in college football, that a lot of rivalries missing in college football because of the realignment and the state of things, and that was maybe up at the top of the list. The fans want these games. Now, I don't know if A&M feels the same way, but Texas, I think, as a whole, is certainly excited, it seems like, to renew the rivalry.
I had no stake in it. But yeah, no, we've lost a lot of great rivalries, and we're finally getting one back. All right, coaching news. Utah. Kyle Whittingham, I guess, will not coach forever. I'm not sure. He's 64 when he eventually retires, and what an unbelievable run he has done at Utah. Especially since when he started, they didn't call it Group of Five then, but they were a mid-major program, and they are not anymore. But they have named their coach in waiting, defensive coordinator Morgan Scally, will take over for Utah and try to keep this deal running whenever Kyle Whittingham decides to retire. I don't know when that is. I guess 64 seems energetic and in great shape and all that, so it might be a little while. I don't know. Former Utah All-American safety. What you have some thoughts, Pat, on Coach Scally? Obviously, he had some incidents in the past. In 2020, there was an investigation into a text message that he sent that contained a racial slur. The school obviously kept him employed, and he's done a good job as a coach on the field with his defenses. Your thoughts on Morgan Scally, Pat?
Yeah, a couple things. First, Kyle Whittingham, I mean, like, unbelievable job he has done, and to have him there that long. And I mean, there had been some rumors, some rumblings that he was about ready to hang it up for the last couple of years. So my suspicion, without really knowing, is that he's going to retire sooner than later. Maybe this is his last year. I don't know. But Scally was named the, you know, and like Kyle Whittingham is a dude. He's going to go off and like chop wood and ride a motorcycle, you know, around the Wasatch Mountains and just kind of live the dude's life, badass. I think. But yes, badass dude. Scally was named the coach in waiting before, and they rescinded it and cut his salary in half after this racial slur text came out. And the text was back in 2013, so it's a while ago. But still, I mean, like a unforgivable, really, in my opinion, sort of slur to put in writing to anyone, much less somebody who is a university employee and a football coach who works with minorities on a daily basis. So he kept his job. He was fairly fortunate, I thought, to keep his job, and now he's going to be the head coach. He's lived a pretty fortunate existence, I think, since that. He's come back from that, and Utah's ready to go forward with him. And I know there was at least one player who came out and said, yeah, when I was there, that he had some racially insensitive language, not just in a text message, but in person. So, you know, apparently he's able to answer the questions he needs to answer in terms of how are you going to, you know, do your job and relate to black players and other players. There's, you know, a big, like Samoan Polynesian sort of influx there in Utah, and a lot of football players that play at Utah from that area. So, you know, I guess Morgan Scally, congratulations on being pretty fortunate.
Well, I also, these things never work, right? I mean, the head coach in waiting seems to like never work out. The AD in waiting, I don't know that these things end up working out. I just recall the ones that failed. Maybe there are several that worked out, and I'm just not thinking of them. But making public that, you know, it's one thing to like privately, oh, you're in line for the job. I think that kind of happens all the time. But like to make it private, to publicly make it in a contract, is something that I feel like has backfired time and time again.
I think like Jim Boeheim had like five different coaches in waiting, if I recall.
A decade, there was a lot of 15 coaching years
waiting,
or whatever.
Keep waiting. Well, you just never know where these. Like, here's the thing: sometimes the coaches have no experience, and they get the assistant gets promoted, and it's, oh, it's Bob Stoops. Oh, it's William Christopher Sweeney. It's Roy Williams, right? And you go, and then other times it just doesn't work. Like, so I don't know. I guess this is good for recruiting, some continuity that you can go in and no one's asking about. But like, I remember that was a big deal, like when you're signing for 4 years. Now I don't know that anyone, it's like if I have to leave, you can leave, right? Like nothing really matter, you know, whatever. I'll just, if I retire, you can go elsewhere. You're not making that decision where you're like, I don't know, this guy's kind of older. Will you be there in 4 years, coach? So I don't know. Well, Utah went their route. Weirdest story of the week. I'm not even sure quite what to make of this thing. Basketball. Kyle Filipowski, the 7-footer from Duke, turned pro. He fell to the second round, projected to be a first round pick. This is not like this great draft. He ends up going 32nd overall to the Utah Jazz, falls to the second round. ESPN's Jonathan Givony, who's kind of their draft expert, stuff like that, used to obviously well known. He said on the Low Post podcast of ESPN's, quote, NBA teams are talking about the fact they had questions about his girlfriend being so much older than him. And he was estranged from his family because of the whole situation. It's a very, very odd situation. I personally don't understand why it would cause him to drop like this into the second round. So that sent off all sorts of interesting interest. I mean, your girlfriend caused you to drop? So it turns out he's 20 now, but he has a fiance that is 28, reportedly. Like Josie's on a vacation far away. You know, I like my girls a little bit older. I mean, you know, whatever. Hey, but
did you really go Rick Springfield here?
Oh, you guys, I mean, why didn't they have Rick Springfield play the Texas thing? Kyle's mom took to Twitter and is not happy with this fiance and said this was an end game 3 years ago to have a diamond ring on her hand when Kyle left Duke. He was still in high school. She's accusing this fiance of dating him in high school. And indeed a picture of the prom emerged with Kyle and this woman. And she would have been maybe 25 going to the prom. Oh, I don't. Okay. And then his brother, Daniel Filipowski, has come out and is claiming he was groomed and he was a pawn and all these different things that this woman has kind of moved in on his brother and is now, okay, I got no idea, needless to say, and I don't think us three idiots will be able to figure this out, nor should we. But Daniel Filipowski is now even blaming the Duke coaching staff and John Shire, saying that they knew about this and the family asked for help to stop it and they didn't do anything about it. So we now have a prominent player's family blasting Duke basketball on social media, basically saying don't go there because this guy doesn't, you know, the school and all, and John Shire doesn't care or wasn't able to stop it. I'll get to your thoughts, but like if they couldn't stop it and you're the family, I expect the basketball coach to do it. Shire's got enough on the plate, man. He's trying to succeed Coach K, and now he's got to get into like dating life. I don't know what's going on here, but this is the wildest story. Of all the negative recruiting out there, I've never seen this one. Pat, thoughts?
Oh, this is a different one for sure. I mean, when this one starts unspooling, you're like, what exactly? You know, I've interviewed Filipowski. He's a nice young man. Purely from like three different interchanges, I would describe him as somebody who tries to please. Now, yeah, I could be wrong, but that's from three interchanges totaling maybe 30 minutes. But whether that is a factor here, you know, his personality in this or not, but a college basketball coach should not necessarily be charged with meddling within your players' romance lives, in my opinion. But I will say, I've talked to a lot of coaches who find these things all of a sudden coming across their desk or coming in, you know, where there's some messy situation the player's involved in with a girlfriend or multiple girlfriends or whatever, and it ends up like you're the coach. You're like, really? Am I dealing with this? And, yeah, sometimes you are. Now, I have no idea what's fact or fiction in this one, but it's a weird story, and like, I'm shocked somebody could drop maybe 15 spots in a draft because of their choice of girlfriend.
I've just been spending time looking through photos of them and reading these stories. This is wild. never seen anything quite like this. This really was behind him dropping. I mean, that is bizarre if that were true. But how about like family members coming out publicly with all this is crazy. Brother, mom too. Man, there's not going to be a whole lot of happy Thanksgiving and Christmases.
No.
Yeah, I don't understand. I don't understand the whole thing. I've definitely coaches spend time because they're worried about the point guard and the power forward dating the same girl sometimes. It's blown up a few teams through the years. This one, I got to give, we need guardrails. NCAA needs guardrails. You're only allowed to date within two grades. I mean, come on, man. John Shire. I don't know. Again, this is just a weird story. I can't really, maybe he's all in the wrong. I have no idea, but these are the things that happen. These are the things that happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they do. I mean, again, like there was one school where the football players fought the basketball players over who was dating whom. I know that. Young guys out on their own for the first time. And some of them are entering into their first like relationships, and it can be a wild ride.
Well, you know, NBA relationships are always very stable and traditional.
Oh, so, yeah. Always. Sure. Well, always.
I hope it works out however it's supposed to work out. I don't know. Maybe just likes the girl. Hard for me to say. Most innovative idea yet I've heard on how to help budget shortfalls. You know, we've been talking about this. Everyone's broke. Every school is broke. They had a meeting at the Ritz-Carlton in Naples to say how broke they all were. So it's tough out there for these schools. This one's pretty ingenious though. Back up in Nebraska, we had a resurrection in Nebraska recently.
Yes.
Somebody trash the DMV. For reasons we don't know. I can't remember.
That's right. Oh, a fish assault.
Oh, they threw fish at the brand new opening office of the DMV. A University of Nebraska regent has proposed a way. This would be fundraising and also as a way for lifelong Cornhusker fans to carry their support into the afterlife. When Memorial Stadium undergoes its next renovation, Regent Barbara Weitz of Omaha suggested building a columbarium. I don't know, sorry. Under the football field where departed fans can have their ashes inurned. Weitz acknowledged she made her pitch lightheartedly, but didn't think any proposal should be diminished out of hand with the university facing a $58 million budget shortfall. Prices for niches where cremation urns are stored could vary depending on location, with a spot under the 50-yard line of the end zone sold at a premium.
Jeez Louise.
One thing I know best about Nebraska is how much the football team and volleyball team mean. We really do love our sports team and follow them everywhere. It's part of being a Nebraskan. So why wouldn't being buried under the field be a great way to close? So it was kind of a combination of needing money and talking to ways to get it and kind of say, let's use our imaginations. God. I got to say, it's a pretty good idea. Okay.
So, have you seen our football field? It also acts as a graveyard.
Yeah. Like, here, I'm picturing this scene, right? Like, the athletic department people are reading, you know, the obits or whatever, and like, oh, hey, this donor just died. Contact the family. Excuse me, Mrs. Smith. I'm so sorry about the passing of Mr. Smith. Now, we could bury him under the N for $50,000. Or under the end zone where Mike Rozier used to score touchdowns for $35,000. Or, you know, if you're a little bit pinched, we could do it somewhere else for $10,000. What do you say? Sorry about your loss, but what do you say?
I think that's the funniest part. Like, Dad, I don't know if he was worth the end zone price. Let's 37-yard right. line, buddy.
Yeah. Dad was a tightwad. He wouldn't want us to spend that much to put him under the end. No way.
How about under the bench, sideline? What's the sideline go for? Under the turf, under the sideline, maybe 10 grand.
I don't know
or something.
What. I think maybe. This, first off, there are ashes spread all over these stadiums. You know that, secretly.
Oh, yeah. People sneak in there, and dump
a
ashes.
A famous
for sure.
picture mm-hmm. from the Kick Six game at Alabama Auburn was somebody dumped a bunch of right. ashes in the on the field. There was a picture. I'm pretty sure it was the Kick Six
Perfect.
Game.
Just yeah. means more to
someone. Everyone stormed the field. They took it, dropped grandpa right here. And I mean, if you're a big enough fan, is there a greater honor? This is your spiritual home. Like, this is what you, we should take them to the beach, take them to a river. I think this is actually an excellent idea.
My wife had this idea that we would take our former cat's ashes, C-A-T, and dump them on the midfield of Davis Wade Stadium in Starkville.
Really?
I talked her out of that.
Good work. Good work.
So sideline? Good work. What'd you do?
if you'd known they were going to charge you, you'd really talk her out of it. Yeah. But so
I just
let's
could
ask.
See calling, you know, somebody over at Mississippi State. Hey, can I get in the stadium for about? I just need like 5 minutes.
Dan, now like you're a Bruins fan. You want to be spread out there over the ice?
Well, it doesn't work with the ice. You know? No,
that's weird. It really doesn't.
I don't know.
Wouldn't work well at all.
They've mostly disappointed muddy. Me in my life. I mean, one Stanley Cup in my life. I got to watch like, I don't know, watch like someone take a dumbass penalty in the Eastern Conference semis. Like, I don't know. I the afterlife is supposed to be better, right?
Yeah, right. In the afterlife, they win all the cups.
I don't know. I don't think I would do it, but I see people wanting to do it. And spreading of ashes is a big decision. On what to do. I just think so it's more to it here, like Notre Dame, Texas A&M, and the military academies all have cemeteries. And I'm sure am I saying this wrong? Columbar, I've never heard of this word, but places to store ashes, I guess. No. But those are unaffiliated.
I thought it was crematorium, but I could be wrong.
I mean, prisons have like a prison graveyard. This was my, South Carolina real estate developer. This is all from a AP story. Eric Olson. Great work, Eric. It's not loading now. South Carolina is a real estate developer. I'm sorry, I was going to say your name, and then my computer froze up. He is seeking permits to build a Calabrium across from William Bryce Stadium. So you could do it outside the stadium and be near, but this would be under. I feel like it might scare, like people believe in ghosts and like, is it haunted? Right? A lot of people think their stadiums are haunted. Whit Suber is the guy. He's trying to get approval from South Carolina leaders to build an above ground place. Mm. I'm just going to call it place across the street. Came up with the idea in 2016 after he bought the land adjacent to a popular tailgating area.
You know, like I'm all in favor of just dispersing the ashes. We don't need more clutter in the world with, you know, like actual.
Would you rather it underground like officially or the dumping? Like then it's just people just dump it over the edge and then just run. Guardrails, NCAA committee, get it.
I will say this. I like when I'm gone, I'm not sure I care that much what you do with the ashes, you know, like just put me in the backyard. Fine. I don't care.
Really? You
know? In the backyard?
Yeah. Why not? All right. I like my backyard.
Where are the dog pees?
We got no dog, so
the next house will. But
maybe
the
in the garden, if it'll help the tomatoes.
The next family in the house will.
Right. If it helped the tomato garden grow, put me there.
Clemson had that graveyard where they every time they beat a ranked team, they'd put up a tombstone.
Yeah. Yep. Sod Cemetery at Florida State, same concept.
I've been trying for years to just observe someone doing it at Augusta National. But I've never found anybody. Yeah. I've always kept my eye. You know that people were bringing ashes down to that place. Yeah. Amen Corner.
Yeah.
Just like they got it stuffed in their pocket.
Yeah, you got them in like a Ziploc bag or something. Like
put a little bit there. There's undoubtedly, you know, I don't know. Anyway, this is where we're at. We're so broke. We're trying to get the dead. Let's get
July
the dead.
July 2nd.
That's it. The next fundraising.
I've heard worse.
In college.
Sports. I've heard worse. I don't think it.
Have you?
Everybody have a great 4th of July. Don't die because you can't get spread at your favorite stadium yet. And we need all of our subscribers. Enjoy. Happy birthday to America. And we'll be back next week. Talk to you.